And that was round five of Super League. And welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And to make both head and tail of the last 7 days of Rugby League, we're joined once again by Mr. Martin Sadler. And Mr. Matthew Shaw is also here.
Hello, hello.
And welcome to the show, everyone. Well, where to start this week, gentlemen? Firstly, where's Doug?
Well, he's got a new job working with the Barnsley Chronicle, believe it or not.
How dare he?
He's going to be one of their main men, I'm fairly sure. So, sadly, it means he can't be with us on midweek, but he'll still be working with League Express at the weekend, so that's great.
I'd like to think we had a hand in it anyway on the show.
Absolutely.
It's been up and up since...
His words of wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, all the best.
We'll miss him.
In your new role. But where to start on the pitch? And, well, shall we go to France firstly? Not for the Toulouse match, we'll discuss that later, but for the Catalan Dragons against Salford. And I'll come to you, Martin, if you like.
Well,
I've got written down.
I thought two of the most, significant games of the season were both played in France at the weekend, because we'll talk about Toulouse afterwards. But I thought Salford were absolutely magnificent. And, a lot of people have said, well, what on earth happened to Catalans? Well, obviously what happened to them was they were playing against a side that was absolutely red hot. It's impossible to overstate how important Jackson Hastings has been to Salford since he joined them, and he had another blinder on Saturday. But the real interesting player, I thought, was Jake Bibby, who was playing his first game. A lot of people sort of think Jake Bibby is, sort of added extra at Salford, doesn't get in the team most weeks, plays on the wing normally when he does, but on this occasion he played at centre, replacing Junior Sauer, who was injured. And he was absolutely incredible, I thought. From beginning to end, I just thought he had a superb game, played a real key role in several of their tries. Got two of them himself just before and just after half time. Both of them were magnificent tries, brilliantly created by long distance play from deep inside their own half, and it was just thrilling to watch. And lots of those Salford tries will be on a tape at the end of the season showing tries of the season, won't they? Let's face it.
I mean, Matthew, it was pretty sensational, wasn't it? In all fairness, I mean, Dinistis are built on games like that, just, and performances like that.
Just a staggering performance, absolutely staggering performance from a side that we all know, we've said on this show before, is more than capable. The thing is, they were starting to get injuries, and we were all just, this is the test. Well, they passed with flying colours in the first opportunity they had to do so. Catalans will be naturally disappointed. We thought they got rid of that soft underbelly.
Where does Steve McNamara go from here after that one? Because it is just a defeat, but it's... I mean, how good were Salford, how bad were Catalans?
The making of a defeat is your response. So if they respond well, then I think you can look at it and go, okay, it was a fluke. But they have to respond. They responded to losing to Wakefield in, again, a performance that was not as bad as that, but disappointing. They responded by beating Warrington. Now, if they can turn around again and put in a response, at least they're showing that the fight's there and the enthusiasm, maybe not the consistency.
Well, they're at Hull Kingston Rovers this coming Sunday, so that's not a bad place to have a response, because they'll be playing against Josh Drinkwater, who played for them last year. Josh Drinkwater versus Matty Smith, that's a mouth-watering thing to anticipate, in my view. But you know what it reminds me of, this result and this performance? It takes me back to 2017. On a night in March, the scoreline, Castleford Tigers 66, Leeds Rhinos 10. So, I mean, Castleford scored 20 more points in that game than Salford did on Saturday. Of course, everybody then said, what on earth has happened to Leeds Rhinos? Gary Hetherington said, we've got 4 weeks to fix it, or he was threatening to sack Brian McDermott. In the next 4 weeks, Leeds won every single game.
And they went on to win the grand final.
And they went on to win the grand final. We tend to do this in rugby league. We react to a single one-off result, which may be a one-sided result. But rugby league is a game where you can get one-sided results when everything goes right for one team. Actually, I think that result on Saturday is far more dangerous for Salford than it is for Catalans, because Salford may now think they can do that every week. And they won't be able to. I mean, you can't play like that all the time. Not everything will go right for you in the way it did for them on Saturday. Whereas Catalans, they'll know that they've got to sort of do, you know, they've got to put right what was wrong in that game. The sign for them is that they've got to get better, and they will do under Steve McNamara. There's no doubt about it.
Salford go to Castleford on Sunday. That's going to be a hell of a game if Salford play like that.
Well, it was always a game that I was looking forward to anyway, because for me they are the two teams I enjoy watching the most. But given that result, yeah, you look at that now and think, okay, this is an examination of how good and how serious Salford are and their ambitions. Their players have said all along they think that they can really upset the apple cart and push up towards the playoffs. Well, if they can beat Castleford, that would be the way to do it. I've got to say, Martin made a valid point. It's really hard to examine games in the early rounds of the season because you only need one defeat and suddenly your prospects can change from looking like you're going to be right up there
Indeed.
To right down the bottom. So
yeah.
it is difficult. I think what you would say about Catalan, and I think this is an assessment you can make, is that when the going gets tough, they've not really stuck in games so far, and I think that's a concern. I don't think a good team, a top team, gets hammered by anyone 46-0, because I think even when a side's red hot like Salford were, you find that steel, you find that grit to just make sure you give yourself a shot. If you watch St Helens were the prime example last year. St Helens were second best in a lot of games, certainly around June, July time. They found a way to win. They stuck in the games. They just did enough to stay in, and then when the moment came, they took it. Catalans, I don't think they have that trait.
That's when games are close, though, but sometimes a game gets away from you, doesn't it? And it did for the Catalans on
a couple of those
Saturday.
Tries at the end there was people just trotting to get the
and
ball.
This is the point. I mean, if you watch, I think it might have been the last try when they scored. Sam Tompkins, he, instead of chasing down the guy with the ball, I can't remember who scored.
It was Sio, Ken Sio.
He just lets him run under the sticks because he's turning around arguing with everyone. He should have been chasing him to make sure he has to nudge it. It's little things
and
like
an extra 2 points.
Which, look, it made absolutely no difference in the game. I know, but
to a scoreline.
It's just one of those that I look back, if I was to make a point to try and explain this, when Saints played Catalan in the Challenge Cup semi-final last year, Catalans blew them away early on. Were phenomenal. Saints lost the game, but they scraped the way back into it in the second half. They clawed the way back into having just that outside chance, despite having been completely outplayed. I don't see that in Catalans. I think if things get tough at the minute, Catalans disintegrate, and that's a concern.
You know, that remains to be seen, and obviously at Hull KR on Sunday, that's the first time we're going to be able to judge it. But of course, they've signed Sam Cassiano from Melbourne Storm, which I think, I've got to say, my reaction when I heard that news last week was dismay, really, because, you know, I don't think Sam Cassiano is a really great player. They're going to be paying him a massive salary, partly subsidised by Melbourne Storm, because Melbourne had to get him off their salary cap. And it's another sort of signing. It's a Willie Mason type signing, or should we say Frank Paul Nuasala at Wigan, came with this reputation, the wrecking ball, never lived up to it. And these big guys who come from the NRL, it's amazing how often they don't live up to their reputations. You know, players on opposing sides, you know, very quickly come to terms with how to deal with them. There are some exceptions, though. Mm. Having said that, you know, you've got to say Ben Murdoch-Masilla is a tremendous player, but now he's been with us for quite some time.
And he didn't come with that big reputation.
No, he didn't. No, that's right. Players who come with big reputations are, you know, it's a bit worrying because, you know, players over here target them, really, and can soon, you know, eventually drive the fire out of them.
I do think that Cassiano suits Catalan in the way they play, big, direct, so on and
so
forth.
I hope he does, yeah.
I think, despite what I said about Catalan, I think the thing that baffles me about the way they're playing at the minute is they look so much better when they offload the ball. They are a team for me that takes the ball in, offloads and plays from there. They've got some fantastic players who are dangerous in free, in broken play. Sam Tompkins, Tony Gigo are the two obvious ones. David Meade's the same.
Because Gigo and Meade weren't playing on
Saturday. Of course, but they played against Wakefield that was on TV, And they just didn't do that. They showed no willingness to offload the ball or try and play. They just tried to bully Wakefield down the middle of the pitch.
Too conservative a game plan, in other words. And I think that's true.
And I think it was true again on Saturday. And well, ultimately, proof in the pun, they got nilled.
Also being nilled, though, at the weekend with the London Broncos on Friday night. We're not quite at the stage where we can call St Helens the Invincibles just yet. But,
no.
I mean, so I think someone did say that on the Total RL forum, but it is early days, well, but they are looking pretty impressive.
Well, Saints dominated the game territorially against London Broncos, but the Broncos defended heroically, apparently. I mean, I've not seen the game, obviously, seen the tries. But, you know, the Broncos, I think, have really started the season incredibly well. Just getting two wins is probably more than most people thought they'd get for the whole season. And it's ironic that, you know, in round six of the competition, the Broncos are visiting Leeds and they're ahead of them. Who would have predicted that at the start of the season? You know, and it's an absolutely vital game for Leeds Rhinos on Friday night. And I think Leeds Rhinos will win, to be perfectly honest. I think they...
That's a brave prediction after the last two performances,
yes. But, I mean, They were a disaster at Hull, weren't they, Leeds?
I've got a whole section of the show dedicated to both Leeds and Wigan.
Okay, well, let's talk about it then.
But yeah, St Helens, I mean, they can't do no wrong at the moment.
Just minding their own business, aren't they? Just get on with the job.
Look, is that worrying for everyone else?
No, because they did this last year and didn't win anything. So if Justin Holbrook alluded to this before the start of the season, they weren't going to change anything in the early stages of the year. Because at the end of the day, everything that worked tremendously well, what they did at the start of last season, it's the business end of the year when we have to start looking at Saints. Ultimately, their season will be defined on the playoffs. They're going to be in the playoffs.
Of course. But I mean, at the moment, it looks like a three-horse race, doesn't it, between Saints, Warrington and Castleford, with maybe even Salford, joining in. I mean, Salford are fourth at the moment.
I'd love that.
I would too. I'd love to see Salford doing well. I mean, you know, second v fourth at Castleford this weekend. So, you know, there are some really exciting games coming up, in my view.
You mentioned Warrington and Castleford there. They went head-to-head at the weekend, on Thursday. Warrington 24, Castleford 10. Read anything into that result, really? Barring the fact Warrington did bounce back with a win.
Growing confidence of Declan Patton. Of course, the return of Ben Curry, which was great to see. I mean, Ben Curry's a lovely young guy, and when I was watching that game, I don't know about you, Matt, but I was sort of hoping that Ben Curry wouldn't get injured again.
Yeah.
You know, you wish the best for a player who's come back after a long injury, and you keep your fingers crossed and hope that he's going to get through the 80 minutes okay, and I'm so pleased that he did. It'll be a massive boost for his confidence, and, you know, it's tremendous to see him there. But the thing about that game, though, prior to the game, you looked at the two teams. The starting 13s looked to be pretty evenly balanced. But then you looked at the bench.
Yeah.
And you looked at the Warrington bench, you know, Murdoch Masilla,
Philbin.
Joe Philbin, you know, gosh, it looked
Jason
tough.
Clark was on it as well.
Jason Clark on the bench too. You know, you knew that Castleford might be in the game for the first 20 minutes, but they might struggle after that because their bench, you know, didn't really have the quality that the Warrington bench had. And that proved to be the case.
I think it was a game that probably satisfied both coaches. Warrington got the win and put in a fairly decent display. Castleford started well. They will look back at that Paul McShay missed opportunity, which...
Absolutely.
For a man of his standard...
Could have gone 12-0 ahead.
For a man of his standard, it was an inexplicable mistake to make because the line was just there for him and it's just not what you expect from Paul McShay. As Martin alluded to, when Philbin and Murdoch Masilla came on, the game completely changed. And Warrington never looked back from there. But look, Castleford have played five games, they've won four, they've got a stack of injuries. I don't think they can be too upset.
No, I don't think so. But what about Jake Mamo as well, scoring two tries and creating one as well? You know, transfer from Warrington from Huddersfield during the close season, has had to wait for his opportunity, really. But in that game, displaced Tom Lynham on the wing and looked as though he probably did well enough to keep his place, I would imagine. So, and of course, that's against Wigan this Friday night. So, you know, it's... Warrington are looking vibrant, aren't they? Let's face it. And, that game coming up against Wigan is going to be, you know, really interesting for them, I think.
Yeah.
And Hull KR... great win this away at Wakefield. I mean, Aaron did describe it as not the prettiest of games, but it's 2 points for Hull KR against Wakefield.
It was a result that pretty much summed up both teams. Wakefield just can't handle being favourites.
No,
they just can't.
They don't seem to be able to, do they?
It just never works.
But of course, they had a massive complaint that a try scored by Tom Johnston was disallowed because he was in touch, and they claim he wasn't. I've seen the television footage. It's very difficult to tell from the television footage whether he was, or I couldn't make a call on that. But certainly Chris Chester felt able to make a call, and of course his position in the stadium, you know, is right above that point, isn't it? I assume that, you know, he was making a pretty informed call. But, you know, so it was bad luck for Wakefield because, of course, they also claimed that there was a knock-on in the build-up to Danny Maguire's winning try. So, you know, they felt hard done by, did Wakefield, at the weekend.
I always think in a game like that, if you're having to rely on referee calls going your way, then you've probably left yourself in a position to lose it anyway. So
it's the same referee for both sides.
You've got to look at what you did in the other 78, 79 minutes of the game. That said, it was on Sunday, it wasn't conditions where you were going to see points aplenty, and you know, when you get your...
Yeah, the scoreline reflected the conditions, didn't it?
As for Hull KR, again...
Well, they're above Wakefield now. They have played a game more, but
it sums up Hull KR to a T. They too, just every now and again, just seem to get a result. I've said all along, I think they could be dragged into a relegation scrap.
Still,
still, it's too early.
I'm not changing any.
Yeah, London have four, and everyone thought they were guaranteed to go down. So.
But what about Mitch Garbutt for Hull KR? Absolutely,
tremendous signing.
Absolutely doing brilliantly. He's at the top of the Albert Goldthorpe medal table with Jackson Hastings at the moment, and it's very unusual for a prop forward to, you know, be at the top of that table. And you know, he's been an inspired signing for Hull Kingston Rovers, and you sort of look at him and think, continue to think, why did Leeds let him go? Looks a bit of a mystery to me.
If there's going to be a prop win the Albert Goldthorpe medal, it will be this year. And there's a reason for that. Because of the reduction in interchanges, they're having to play bigger minutes, and people are recognising, my word, he's played a lot of minutes. And then you look at the stats, and the stats are just far and away better than what we used to see.
Are we not going to see an increase in injuries, though, because of that?
Potentially.
We might do.
Potentially.
Yeah. But the other prop is Liam Watts, of course. He's right up there near the head of the table and has been leading it until round five. So, and I thought again, he had a great game for Cass at Warrington.
Well, he for me, it's all opinion. He for me has been the best player in the league so far. Liam Watts.
Well, next up for KR is that game on Sunday against Castleland Dragons at home. Part of a double header as well, we should say, because Toronto playing Batley the same afternoon. Both games will be on telly. Hull FC versus Wakefield on Friday. And speaking of Hull, I've left it for as long as I can. But we need to talk about Leeds, Martin.
Well, I mean, it's a funny old game, isn't it? You know, they went 10-0 up. It was great. It was great to see Harry Newman playing, I think, because he's been, you know, the 18th or 19th man for most of the season so far. But on Friday night, he got his chance. Scored the first try, made the second try for Tom Briscoe, and you thought, my God, you know, Leeds are 10-0 up. What's everybody worrying about? But then they were blitzed, 30 points to Hull in that first half with no reply, and then Hull just scoring one more try in a rather less enterprising second half. So, you know, but Leeds are in trouble, aren't they? They're not firing. We thought they'd overcome their problems when they won at Salford, 34-12, I think it was, in round three, and everybody thought then, oh, you know, Leeds are back on track. But they're not really, and, you know, the 2 points from six games just isn't good enough for them, is it really? Let's face it.
I mean, Gary Heverington did say this is the competition working, isn't it?
Well, Leeds and Wigan is in 10th and 11th place. Yes. You know, it is in a way.
I think that's him deflecting.
About it.
Look, I haven't seen the highlights of this game yet, I'll be honest. Were most of Hull's tries from close range?
No, some of them were long distance
ones.
Okay.
Oh, that's actually more concerning because against Wakefield, it was quite merely a fact that they made they'd make an error, they'd concede a penalty, and every time Wakefield got to within 25 metres, Leeds couldn't defend the line. Yeah. It was, the line defence was horrific. When they could, when they just played a percentage game, Wakefield couldn't break them down. Wakefield just capitalised on every single half opportunity that Leeds gave them. Now, that is still concerning, because if your line defence cannot defend, you've got an issue. But if they're now conceding from long range as well, there are clearly...
Well, yes. I mean, there seem to be lacking leadership. And, you know, it's that thing... It goes back to the Catalans losing against Salford. You know, once things start going against you, you know, rugby league is a game, we always say, don't we, it's about momentum. And Hull got it against Leeds when they started scoring. And throughout the first half, it was only the half-time hooter that stopped them, actually. It wasn't anything to do with Leeds, and they never quite picked it up again in the second half, you know, so...
I mean, the fixture gods have been kind of kind to Leeds, although stranger things have happened. They're hosting London this weekend.
I don't think it is kind. I think it's potentially the worst fixture they could have. That's
it's a banana skin, potentially, but I think they'll overcome it.
London haven't scored a single point away from home yet, so...
I mean, if it was at...
If it was at London, then, you'd be thinking, "Oh my word, they're in trouble here." You would think that Leeds would win, given London have been away from home. But
to play devil's advocate, what if they don't win and London
Leeds,
win? Yeah, what happens then?
I think we can then
say it's a crisis.
Because they will be panicking if they lose to London.
We need to get the red light bulb ready for that one, then, Martin.
Well,
in the
yes,
office.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd be amazed if they lost to London, but you know, having said that, I was amazed last week when Huddersfield won at Wigan. So, you know, it's sometimes nice to be amazed, isn't it?
I wouldn't be shocked because the way London attack, when they get close to the line,
they are very
good close to the line with the ball in hand. Leeds cannot defend their line.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that, isn't it? And you're absolutely right. You know, that's been the problem for Leeds, defending close to the line. And, you know, London have got Eddie Batty, who's, you know, fairly well named as a battering ram near to the opponent's line.
Batty the batterer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, they've got other players who will take advantage if they can. But I just, you know, at some point, the quality within a team has got to come to the fore, and Leeds have got quality that, you know, quite honestly, London don't yet have. And you can't imagine it not coming to the fore, can you?
I'll take a little snippet of that recording there,
absolutely,
Martin.
Absolutely,
yes. I'll play it next week.
Yeah, I shall hug my head in shame if Leeds let me down.
There were results in Super League that will surprise me more London beating Leeds this weekend.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Huddersfield Giants. There's no team now in the division without a win. Congratulations to Huddersfield. A great victory on the road. Wigan 6, Huddersfield 14. If Leeds are potentially in crisis, where are Wigan at?
Well, Wigan have lost 3 games in a row, haven't they, in Super League, by 1 point, 2 points and 8 points, which doesn't sound that bad, really, when you think about it. And, you know, I think the World Club Challenge did take an awful lot out of them. And then they had that game against Hull that got Hull's season, you know, up and running when Hull won the Golden Point game. And then they went down to London. And I don't think it's going to be a surprise for any team to go down to London and lose, because I actually think a lot of visiting teams struggle on artificial pitches. I think that's really quite important.
Leeds certainly do. They never win at Widnes.
Yeah, you know, that's a challenge for a lot of teams to do that. So then, of course, they lost to Huddersfield. But Huddersfield, it was by far Huddersfield's best performance of the season. They, you know, the Huddersfield spine clicked at last, you know, and actually it was the first time this season that the Huddersfield spine, that they, you know, their first choice spine has been fully available to play for them. So, you know, it worked perfectly for Huddersfield. They put Wigan under tremendous pressure early on, three goal line dropouts in the first 5 minutes or so. And I think they knocked a lot of the early confidence out of Wigan. And, you know, Cruz Leeming scored that brilliant try. Matt Frawley had by far his best game for Huddersfield since coming from the Bulldogs. So, you know, if the big thing for Huddersfield, though, is, you know, can they actually keep up that sort of form? Because, you know, they suddenly look like a good team again. And
Saints at home, know, on Thursday night.
Well, that's a hell of a challenge for them. And knowing Huddersfield as I do, my suspicion is that Saints will, you know, put one over them again.
17 offloads for Huddersfield versus Wigan's 2.
I've been bitterly disappointed with Wigan.
I got the impression watching that game that Huddersfield could have, if they were a bit more confident, they would have scored a lot more tries.
Could have done,
a bit like I was saying about Catalans. Adrian Lamb said he was going to play with flair, with excitement. I'm not seeing any of that at all.
Well, the excitement's come from the other side, hasn't
In the World Club Challenge, they played Sydney Roosters. They tried to play the Aussies at the Aussies game, play straight down the middle, crash, bang, wallop, and didn't win. The second half, they came out, threw the ball around, tried to play with offloads, tried to play into space, really went toe-to-toe with them. That, for me, should have been a lesson. This is how we should be playing. Wigan are not doing that.
What is it about the World Cup Challenge that does create this hangover?
It's a high-intensity game. It's a high-intensity game that far surpasses anything you see at
Is that all the answer as well, or is there stuff about the head coach uncertainty and stuff like that?
There's been a lot of talk as well about George Williams going to the NRL, hasn't he? I noticed there was a story earlier this week about him, you know, Canberra signed him, and then they put out a statement saying they hadn't, and all sorts of things.
Yeah, it was made out to be an exclusive, despite the fact we had it in the 2 weeks ago.
Well, indeed. Well, don't forget, the first two games of the season, Wigan went to St Helens, and in a great game, they lost fairly narrowly. And then in the second game of the season, they beat Leeds at home quite comfortably, which probably looked more significant then than it looks now, of course, because, you know, Leeds are perhaps not the team we thought they were.
Here's a question with Wigan. If you're putting together a 25-man squad, most squads are 25-man. If you could put together a 25-man squad from Super League, how many Wigan players would be in your 25-man squad?
Well, that's a good question, but obviously not many is the answer at the moment. Actually, one guy who is playing well for Wigan, I think, is Joe Bullock, the kid they got from Barrow. And I mean, you know, that sort of says a lot, doesn't it? You know, that they've picked him up from a Championship club. Yeah. And, you know, at the weekend, he was by far the best metre gainer for Wigan with 137 metres, certainly of all the forwards at least, when he came off the bench. So, you know, that's a hell of a thing for him. But the others, you know, seem to be just lacking a bit of confidence. You know, Sean O'Loughlin made 3 important handling errors and looked really annoyed, and, you know, there was that thing on the TV that where we saw him, you know, looking fiercely into the eyes of Sam Powell when Powell passed the ball to him and he dropped it.
It's certainly a big game this weekend on Friday night against Warrington for Wigan.
I think they need a performance. I don't think they can go there and expect to win the way they're playing. But like Martin made a good point, they're only just losing. But it's just the manner they're playing in that doesn't fill me with confidence. You can say what you want about Sean Wayne and the way he played. They won. They won ugly a lot, but they won.
Well, what was that Joni Mitchell song? Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Yeah.
And that's Wigan with Sean Wayne.
Yeah, the taxer. Was it?
Yeah, big yellow taxi, yes. That's right. That's right.
You know, I just question this idea that Adrian Lamb said he was coming in and they were going to play with flair and excitement. I just have not seen that. I have not seen that at all.
He did say, though, to be fair to him, that wouldn't happen early in the season. It would happen when we got to the spring and summer months.
Fine, but what's his formula for winning games right now? Because whatever it is, it's not coming off.
We'll wait and see how things go then this weekend. But that's our look at Super League. Just a little Championship roundup. Featherstone and Bradford back to winning ways. Widnes now on -4, everybody. -4 following win at Barrow. Lee beat Swinton in front of a great crowd of just over 2,000. Sheffield took their first loss. Halifax nilled Dewsbury. And let's go to this one. What a game to lose against Toronto. Over 6,000 people there. Mm-hmm. Toronto home and hosed at half time, and then to lose, come up with this Gallic free flowing performance to score 40 odd points in the second half. It's quite an outcome both on and off the pitch for the club.
It's amazing. I mean, you're right, they were 10 points behind at half time, but they came out and blitzed them in the second half. And they were playing at the Stade Ernest Vallon and got, as you say, over 6,000 people there, giving some idea of the potential for Rugby League in Toulouse, if and when Toulouse get into Super League. And that's certainly a possibility, isn't it? I mean, it does look to me as though there's a potential for a championship grand final between Toulouse and Toronto. And at the moment, I'd probably back Toulouse to win that one, given the way they performed at the weekend. Mark Carella got 26 of their points, you know, playing at fullback, great performance by him. And, you know, Super League's going to have to decide what to do, you know, in future, because there's a lot of talk among Super League clubs that if there's a reduction in the number of English clubs in Super League, it'll hit the next TV contract, the value of the next TV contract. Well, the obvious solution to that is to raise Super League to 14 or even 16 sides to get more sides in.
Stop talking in such an ideal form.
And, well, I mean, we said this last week, and there's no way that, you know, this talk about, you know, if we did get Toronto and Toulouse and Catalans and London all in the same division, there's not a chance that's going to detract from a future TV deal. It would only enhance it, wouldn't it?
Surely
the audiences would go up
It would probably detract from Sky, because they're not single countries where the, you know, the Sky.
But you can offset that, can't you? With
But will we do it
with money from France, from French TV?
But they don't get any. They don't get any money from France.
Well, yes, but if there were two clubs in Super League, that might put it on a different negotiating level.
Maybe,
it?
But you've got every right to be sceptical on that.
Well, I think you will be sceptical, but you know, somebody has got to go out and start selling the game more effectively, and start now, actually, because I don't know when the negotiations are set to begin. I suspect probably later this year, but you know, we've got, in my view, this year Super League and the Championship, I've got to say, are incredibly vibrant leagues. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've got to get that message out more widely. At the moment, the game is very, very poor at being able to, you know, present the sort of thrills that, you know, those of us who watch the game see on a weekly basis. You know, I think rugby league can compare with any sport. I mean, you know, I'm not a great soccer fan or a rugby union fan. I think rugby league is a far more enjoyable sport to watch than those things are. But the image, the public image for the wider public is not that, is it? It's that, you know, football is vibrant, rugby union is, you know, with the Six Nations and so on, it gets enormous audiences and good luck to them. But we need to build our sport up, and we need people running the game who know how to do that. And I don't think we've got them on the evidence I've seen so far.
I think the sport has a bit of an issue with the league structure still, because I think the ideal is 14 teams, and I don't think anyone will try and hide away from that, realistically. I think by 2022, I think Toulouse will be ready. They're not ready yet. They accept that themselves. They're not ready yet, but by 2022, you'd hope they were.
Well, they might be ready by next year. I mean, if they win the grand final, they'll have to be.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But, you know, people said last year that London weren't ready.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that.
London weren't ready, but they do look pretty ready now.
But Toulouse say that their issues come a little bit down to costs, because the travel costs are changing, and it's costing them more money. The player pathways, London have really good player pathways, a great academy. Toulouse don't have that. That's where they accept these as issues they've got,
That is an issue. But there's some interesting things happening in France. You know, there are quite a lot of commercial people looking at rugby union, looking at the elite rugby union league. Its attendances are falling. Its viewing figures are falling. And you know, we've run stories fairly recently in League Express where major companies are switching to supporting rugby league, which is an almost unheard of thing.
And this is where Toulouse needs to come in, because if Toulouse can build their commercial side, it will inevitably help. They still need to sort the stadium out. Mm. That's another thing. So the three things there that Toulouse admit the short on. Now, if they can get them sorted, which you'd hope they could do by 2022, then by then I think you can look at 14 teams. The problem is now. Well, the problem is if you do that, you look below Super League, who at this moment in time, other than Toronto and Toulouse in the nearish future, are in a position where you think, yeah, they can go back to Super League?
I mean, there's a lot of clubs in League One and Championship who've got the facilities or will have the facilities in the next few years. I mean,
well, Doncaster have great facilities, don't they?
Facilities aren't really an issue for a few clubs, because you could look at Lee, you could look at Widnes, you could look at Halifax.
Absolutely,
there's low. You know,
if you're picking Super League clubs on facilities, there are a few clubs there now that wouldn't be in, and a few clubs outside that would be.
100%, 100%. So, it comes down to the fact that they need money behind them.
But I think the thing about the Championship is, you know, we've reverted now to a top five Championship playoff at the end of the year. And that's going to be a massive thing for the Championship, as it will be for Super League. And I think the way that we've now got the Championship with 14 teams in it, we've got a tremendous opportunity to build up all the clubs in the Championship and to make it a competition that all these clubs want to be part of, want to remain part of. And I think, you know, we're seeing some progress with some of the crowds in the Championship.
Great crowds over the weekend.
All
four figures.
Exactly. Which is, you know, what we want to see, isn't it? I mean, Sheffield Eagles are an interesting point. Their crowds are edging up towards 1,000.
Stadium will be midway through next season.
Yeah, we think so. I mean, but, you know, with the World Cup being played in
Bramall Lane
in 2021... I'd like to see Sheffield Eagles playing one or two games at Bramall Lane as well, to try and boost their own support down there. Perhaps even as double headers with Super League clubs, you know, on a one-off basis.
Just before we move on to the Challenge Cup, just a quick mention for the Rochdale-York match. It's a weird one, that, isn't it? I mean,
it is weird. Yeah,
I've followed a football club who've been tenants before, and stuff like that has happened in football. I mean, it's unfortunate, isn't it?
I feel for Rochdale, because clearly they are treated as second best. I'm not afraid to say that they are. There's track record there. It's not their fault. They wanted the game on. They thought the game was going on. The one criticism you can throw at Rochdale, and they've held their hands up, is that the communication was poor. The communication was poor.
I do get the impression they didn't even know until they got there.
No, but that still doesn't. That's not an excuse for me. They should have been fined.
Do you think York should get the points?
No.
No, I don't. I don't like awarding points.
Well, I just think if you want that points handed to you, it doesn't say a lot. You should want to go and win the game.
Absolutely, It was very frustrating for a lot of York fans who were there.
100%. Completely understand why York are frustrated. Mm. But to expect the points, especially when it's not Rochdale's doing, I think that would be incredibly unfair.
Well, the statement's going out left, right and centre over the last 48 hours or so. So totalrl.com, the place to go to keep abreast of that one. Challenge Cup fourth round draw took place on Tuesday down at Oddsall. It was on the red button on the BBC website. Some big ties have come out of this. Keithley Cougars against Bradford stands out a country mile. I think that was the first one out of the hat as well, remarkably. Kyle Forster at Rochdale Hornets, he's travelling back to Whitehaven. We've got four community sides left: West Hull, Fatto Heath, Lot Lane and Featherstone Lions. And for smug Matthew Shaw, who said last week that no upsets would occur, Siddell is still in the.
Cheers, Ben. Thank you.
Only
by default.
All counts.
There will come a day when people start to actually realise I'm always right.
Oldham against Widnes is also one that stands out, and Hunslet against Halifax. That's big bananas.
The more I think about it, me and Martin had a talk off air, the more I think about it, the more I think there could be a few shocks this time. The reason being, I think there'll be a lot of clubs thinking, why are we bothered about Challenge Cup when we've got 1895 Cup? So I think there will be teams that throw kids out.
Well, I hope not, but that could happen, there's no doubt about it. But I hope not. I still think that playing in the Challenge Cup is a massive, massive thing for all clubs. And of course, the idea that if they get through this round, they might be playing Leeds in the next round.
Just to say about the 1895 Cup, the draw for that sort of place as well: Hunslet taking on Worcester Town, Oldham against Whitehaven, Doncaster against West Wales, and Newcastle Thunder against the Keighley Cougars.
Ben, the bigger point.
Yes.
It's come out that the 1895 Cup final is being played after the Challenge Cup final.
On the 23rd of August?
Yes, but it's after, not before.
How does that work?
It'll be played after, not before.
Yeah, on the same day.
On the same day.
Yeah.
The Challenge Cup final will be at 3:00. The 89th 95 Cup final will be about half five, quarter to six.
And will it be shown on television?
No idea.
This is interesting because at the Summer Bash, when we had the League One Cup, the League One Cup final was always the curtain raiser.
Yep.
And the crowds, I think when I went, it was Barrow against North Wales Crusaders.
Yep.
And the crowds were all right because there was a lot of Barrow fans there and a decent quadrant of North Wales Crusaders fans.
They came and went all day.
Yeah. Are you going to get a bigger crowd for that 1895 final that way round with it right at the end? Because I think you possibly would. Because no one from the Championship clubs turned up. Hardly anyone from the Championship clubs turned up for that League One Cup final.
Okay, I get that point.
It depends who's in it, actually, partly, doesn't it? You know, it depends who's in it, whether they're a big draw or not.
Yeah, if it was Bradford, any Leeds fans might be there to cheer the other team on. And same with if Lee were there, Wigan fans might stay to cheer the other team on. But I don't know. I think the problem is if you look at trophy receptions, people don't stay for them unless their team has won.
I don't know. The getting back to that tube stop at Wembley is a nightmare. I'd sit in my seat for 90 minutes.
I hope you're right that they stay for half an hour and then they realise it's a good game. Well, I will stay for this. I hope,
but it depends how quickly it kicks off after the main game as well.
It's bold.
And the other thing as well is, don't forget, if the game's starting after it's approximately, let's say it's a half five kickoff, which is the best case scenario. If you're on public transport, the game finishes at what?
Last train's at 11, I think, for Houston. Back to Mancunia anyway. I don't know about this side of the Pennines, but
I don't know.
Get a hotel, everyone. It'll be fine. We're nearly running out of time here, but just a quick mention for the NRL. That kicks off this week. Are we all excited about the NRL?
Well, not as excited as normal, because I think the NRL itself has been a disaster over the winter period.
Why did you say that, Matt?
Because, and I don't mean because of some of the things that the players have been doing, but because of the NRL's own response to it. I mean, there's a very interesting letter in our newspaper this week from a guy who's comparing Todd Greenberg, the NRL chief executive, with Gerald Ratner, who, you know, said that most of his products were crap. And Greenberg seems to have been saying much the same thing, as far as I can tell, over the winter. You know, every time any player has been caught urinating in a back alley with somebody photographing him, you know, Greenberg has to come out and have his say about it, and, you know, absolutely slams the game, slams the players, and, you know, what on earth is he playing at? Rugby League in Australia has a fantastic record in terms of its inclusivity, its community work. You know, it's got the proudest record of any Australian sport by a long way in terms of, for example, the way it's treated native Indigenous people, that sort of thing. And yet they're allowing its image to be trashed, not on the basis of any charges that players have been found guilty of, but merely on accusations of things, you know, which haven't, for the most part, haven't come to court or may not be coming to court, and which players are fighting vigorously. In Sydney, there's a massive media presence there that's very anti-rugby league and that will jump on any anti-rugby league story and try and exploit it to the full. Why that is, I'm not quite so sure. But again, it should be the job of the NRL to try and sort that problem out.
So therefore, Todd Greenberg isn't like Mary Whitehouse necessarily. He's reacting to the media pressure that, you know, the spotlight's put on these players. He needs to be seen to be acting, and he has been acting.
I don't know whether you do see. You know, sometimes you've just got to say that, and sometimes you've got to know when not to react. Is what I'm saying, because, you know, the reaction always seems to be a negative reaction that puts rugby league in the dock, and it's his job to ensure that rugby league is not in the dock, but that it's respected for the great things that it does, and he doesn't seem capable of doing it.
Well, safe to say, I think everyone's looking forward to Melbourne against Brisbane and just getting a game of rugby on.
It's always the case, isn't it, that in rugby league the players have always got to rescue the game. And no doubt they will do this weekend. Correct. Melbourne v Brisbane, I'm sure it'll be a tremendous game. I mean, what's going to be quite interesting this year is to see what the effect is on crowds and TV audiences of some of the bad publicity the game has got. Because there's no doubt it has got, you know, the publicity has been awful. And you would expect it to impact upon ticket sales and TV viewing figures. So let's see whether it does or not.
Well, that's nearly it for this week's Talk Rugby League show, but just enough time for any other business. Newcastle Thunder head coach, I've heard a couple of rumours about.
Well, we think it's going to be Dennis Betts.
Is Dennis going as the director of rugby, though?
Not sure yet. I think they're going to make an announcement very shortly.
Breaking news,
I think the thing I was told, and don't hold me to gospel on this, because it might not be true.
You do know how podcasts work. This is recorded.
I do. Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying this is only what I was told.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's true. I've not done any digging on it yet. That Dennis Betts will be director of rugby, and John Sharp was in line for the head coaching role.
Okay.
But there's absolutely no saying that is true. I don't want you to tell me I'm wrong next week.
No, I would never. Even if you were wrong, I would never say you were wrong. Wakefield Castle Stadium plans, that seems to be bubbling under the surface.
Moving on a bit, yeah. And Workington's stadium, of course, is that created a bit of a stir when we talked about the World Cup having contingency plans this week, and I was upon Radio Cumbria talking about that. And you know,
did they grill you, Martin? Or are you...
No, not really. No, I was able to, I hope, present a very positive view of it, because if Allerdale Council can get a stadium built for the World Cup, I think that's going to be tremendous for rugby league generally, for West Cumbria, and for Workington in particular. And you know, they've got the money in place. They've just got to, you know, finally sign, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's, and then get building. And it's going to be a massive thing for Workington if and when we see it actually come to fruition.
The Women's Super League was launched last week as well, April the 7th, and we will have an interview on the Women's Super League closer to the time. And also about TV figures, I believe Sky are quite happy with the initial TV audiences.
Well, Super League put out a press release on Friday night, I think it was, in which they said that, you know, TV audiences are doing really well.
Oh, no.
On a bit more investigation, been fairly selective. You know, and one or two people have sent me emails saying that, you know, you need to really look very carefully at what Super League said. But, they're trying to be positive, aren't they? So, if you can present an image of growing interest in the game, then, you know, that ultimately is a positive thing for rugby league, I think, and for Super League.
Without talking it down, because I don't want to do that, they've been very top-heavy with the fixtures that have been on TV. Round one, you know, Hull Derby.
Oh, yeah.
Saints Wigan.
That was the genius of those early fixtures, though, wasn't it?
Of course.
It was,
it's making
sure
you keep that up throughout the season now, though. That's where challenge is.
That's right.
And finally, any other business, parish notices, back chat on Thursday. Who's on this week?
Three Sports. It is Richard Delariviere, who does a wonderful job of writing Rugby League Heroes. In League Express, there is, who else is on? John Davidson and Danny Lockwood.
Brilliant. Okie dokie.
And me.
And you, of course. Channel 64, 5 o'clock Thursday. If that's not the appropriate time for you, you can record it.
You can.
By pressing
it's
the normal, R button.
It's normally on. There's normally repeats on as well.
Yeah, and totalrl.com on Saturday mornings. It's also available there as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
As is all the latest news from Rugby League. And
right.
League Express on Monday.
Absolutely. Monday morning. Actually, you can also download League Express digitally on Sunday night. So if you're, you know, living in somewhere where it's hard to get hold of League Express on a Monday, or even if you're in Australia, New Zealand, Timbuktu, or anywhere else, you can get Rugby League just by downloading it, which is a great thing. Just go on to the totalrl.com website.
Very early teaser. We've got an interesting reserve grade story.
Mm.
I think will cause a stir.
Mm-hmm. That's the end for this week's Total Rugby League show. A big thank you to Martin Sadler for joining me. Big thank you to Matthew Shaw as well.
Pleasure.
And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye bye.